Hello and welcome to Securing Sexuality, the podcast where we discuss the intersection of intimacy
and information security. I am Wolf Gorlick.
He's a hacker, and I'm Stephanie Gorlick.
She is a sex therapist, and together we're going to discuss what safe sex looks like in a digital age. So, Stephanie, last episode, you coined, and if anyone else has said this, they can argue with us, but I believe you coined the phrase, the Stepford Internet.
Sure, if you want to give me credit for that.
And we even got you to admit that robots may have feelings, too. There's a line that you're like, but I can't believe I'm saying this. The fake influencers can also develop feelings, like poor being. I'm a good being.
I will acknowledge, I don't necessarily know that I believe that they're real feelings, but you have won me over to the idea that some form of feeling exists for some form of robot, sure.
So I was very excited about that, to have that on record. And so to further like delve into this idea of the Stepford Internet, what AI and sex robots and virtual influencers and everything are doing to rewire our intimate connections, I thought who better to have on than Dr. Joanne Oravec. Hello, how's it going?
I'm feeling great, and I'm just so happy to be in the presence of people I admire so much. I went through so many of your podcasts, and I've learned so much. So thank you for all your work through the years.
That's so sweet. Thank you, Joanne. And you are yourself an amazing person that has contributed so much. Dr. Joanne Oravec has spent more than 35 years as a professor at the University of Wisconsin, as well as at City University of New York, teaching information technology, business, and public policy. Joanne, I got to tell you, I am in my first semester of teaching a full-blown class at the University of Minnesota, and I am baffled at how you have done this for 35 years. It is a lot. You have an MBA, a PhD, an MA, an MS, and you have been a visiting fellow at both Oxford and Cambridge, which is amazing. You are a scientist with Inspira Corporation, which is an AI startup. You've written 3 books and more than 90 peer-reviewed articles on AI, robots, disability studies, privacy, and more. In other words, you are now my new hero. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for the amazing intro. I'd like to bring up some of the MBA-related points. The reason why I put MBA and an emphasis in the bio is that robotics, sex robotics, will be a big part of our lives in the future, and the money that people pour into their sex robots today and give to organizations like Real Doll will be money that we all gain from eventually. That money for research and development in this area, just the same way that in the very early days of the internet, the fact that a lot of people bought PCs so they could look at pornography and not be hauled into courts and all of that by the people who own the mainframes, that was a part of the explosion that we know of as the computer age. So again, there are a lot of business aspects that I hope to bring in, but anybody looking at those articles would know that I emphasize the dark side of computing. Well, later on, I want to make sure that we go to the bright side, because I am very pro-human AI and human-robotic marriage. So I want to emphasize that. But the dark side, what do we mean by that? Well, a lot of people are creeped out by computers, and this isn't by robotics. And this isn't something that just sprung up recently. It has a long history. Professor Mori, M-O-R-I, who is still alive, back in the 1970s, coined the term uncanny valley to label this phenomenon that a lot of us face when we're looking at a robot that is so similar to a human being. Sometimes there's a very dark sense that we have, a dark and creepy sense that we can't shake. And I think that creepy sense is going to be around for a long time. And I wanted to write a book, Good Robot, Bad Robot, Dark and Creepy Sides of Robot, Autonomous Vehicles and AI, which anybody can obtain. Just email me, okay? If you're searching and you're a researcher and all that, email me and I'll get you a copy. It's online. But what I'd like to do with you know, by talking about this is emphasizing the fact that there are so many aspects of robotics that we need to normalize, that we need to integrate into our culture, that we don't understand yet, that have long legacies. We basically have 100 years of modern robotics. Back in 1923, that term robot, coming from a Czech term meaning forced labor, was integrated into culture. And there was a movie, Rossum's Universal Robots, that took the world by storm. People would see this movie on Broadway. And it also portrayed in many European venues. And of course, it portrayed robots in a pretty evil light. If you read the script of that play and there was a movie afterward and all of that, you would see some parallels to what's happening today. But again, in that 100 years, we still haven't normalized robots into our lives. They still shock a lot of people. I wrote an article that is even more well-known than my book called Rage Against Robots on Robo-Rage, where a number of people go nuts and they start throwing eggs at Tesla autonomous vehicles. And they start, I first got interested in this because I was giving speeches on robots at various conferences, and I appeared in front of a conference of community college educators and K-12 people and all that. And I was talking about all these service robots that are going to make our lives so easy in schools, deliver mail and stuff like that. And someone in the back of the room said, that little robot up there that you're demonstrating is going to last 20 minutes in my school. And I said, what are you talking about? That the young people would rip it apart, basically. And we discussed, of course, I had to stop everything in my presentation. And a lot of people agreed that there is a very powerful antipathy toward robots, along with those anxieties, that creepiness we were just talking about, that can set behind a lot of the real advances that we need in robotics. And a need in our society and in some of the terrible jobs that people have to do. And again, I think that robot marriages could help out a lot in that regard. I've got some case studies that I hope will prove all of this. Now, marriage can be kind of bad too. I know that I'm going to get emails from folks saying, hey, you're talking up marriage. I got married very late in life to a wonderful person who's around there in the room somewhere. And it's the best thing that ever happened to me. But there are marriages that are in some countries that have women as property and that are linked to all sorts of abuse and terrible things. And of course, through the years, Many societies have made marriage a lot more equitable and have brought in same-sex marriage, different variations of marriages other than just one man, one woman and all that. But again, with that notion of marriage can come stability. It can come respect and people being cared for and all that. And that's what I'd like to bring into our discussion of robotics. And I know that we have an expert developer, Wolf, ready to pounce on with various questions and all of that. But I just wanted to note that we need to look at the dark side, you know, for us to paint this all over. I know some social robotics, a lot of social robotics researchers who say all we have to do is make the robots a little bit bigger, or we can paint them pink. You know, we'll do a study and we'll paint the robots pink, and then we'll get 15 undergraduates who say that robot is friendlier because it's pink, or we'll give it a name and it'll make it more friendly and all that. No, I think there is something very deep in us that's taken centuries to work itself out, in which we have a natural mistrust of robots as another species, the same way we could have a mistrust of the saber-toothed tiger that is chasing us and all that, and to pretend somehow through little bit of gyrations and all that, that we can somehow straighten this all up and make the robot that is going to be friendly and do the work and we won't be fearing and we won't worry about. That's that's the way to go. Now, just to note, the book that I wrote is dedicated to the large number of individuals and growing number of individuals who died at the hands of robots. So it's no joke there. We've got people in manufacturing concerns who weren't given the kind of information they should have been given, and they trusted the robot too much. And we've got lots of people with autonomous vehicles who are dying because the car didn't respond the way it was programmed to operate. The self-driving aspect was not operating properly. So again, I'm hoping that in the future, my work, either the articles and books and all that, will be used by people who maybe feel qualmy about computers and robots and AI and autonomous vehicles, and they don't know why. They've got a lot of companions out there. There's a lot out there, and all of the marketing and all of the research, the surface research that's being done, will not erase that long negative history of robotics. But we can go on to the good stuff if you'd like, anytime you like.
You know, I oftentimes think of it as we're running 20 years of technology on 20,000 years of legacy. And in the tech world, people are like, legacy can't be 20,000 years. Well, you know, our human firmware, our psychology is so hardwired into everything you're saying. And I like that you pulled up Uncanny Valley, because I've heard, I was talking to a psychologist, and he said, you know what? What that probably means is there was a point in time in human development where our ability to differentiate between human and just sort of human was key to survival, that the ability to differentiate in groups and out groups. So yeah, we've got that to deal with. The anti-labor biases have been going on forever and ever. Of course, the word sabotage translates to 16th century wood clog shoes and everything. So, you know, throwing a wood clog shoe into a machine or throwing an egg on a Tesla, we've been doing that for centuries.
Yeah, I love what Wolf was just outlining about need to determine what species we are as opposed to other species and all that. You think of all these subspecies that are evolved, the Neanderthals and various bridge species before our own human species evolved. And there must have been a number of periods. We're still working it out with our sense of Sasquatch whatever, these creatures of the night and all of that. That we fear, and Dracula and all of that. We're still working out species-related issues that very much get to the core of our being and fill our movies, too. What would Netflix be without Dracula and zombies and all of the creatures that fill our imagination?
So, Stephanie, I've got to ask you, because I know I'm the pro-robot, you're generally the anti-robot. Paint it pink, and then it's a good marriage partner, right? That's what I'm hearing.
I do tend to be anti-robot. Joanne, I hope this doesn't change the friendship that we formed, but I am much more, you know, as the therapist, as the person that specializes in human relationships, I'm much more skeptical about human-robot relationships. So now's your chance. Win me over.
I'm old. Okay, let me tell you that end of things. I am old. The body doesn't work after a certain point the way you'd expect. And I would love to have the opportunity to give my partner and all that what he deserves in a way that I might not be able to because of one very bad hip. Okay. I think that older people are providing a whole different aspect to this. And I'm at the various conferences where I've given presentations and all of that, I've gotten a lot of feedback from individuals who say, what's going to happen when my spouse dies? And I would love to have those memories somewhere. I don't want another husband. Like, I'm not going to have another husband. It's on tape now, okay? This is it. First one, you know, one and done. And I'm worried about what might happen if something would happen to my husband. I would want to save all of the incredible memories. He's a peace educator. He's got so much talent and all of that, and I, as well as sexual ability and all of that. And what I would want to do is have a way to store this for the future. So again, those are two aspects that I hope that we'll get into with the examples of some movies that are on those targets too. What I'm hoping is that we all have those opportunities. And I'm thinking in terms of marriage, we've got a Pope right now who is beginning to bless same-sex marriage, not going far as I would like, and a lot of other people would like in that regard. But what if we would have a Pope that would say, okay, if there's a robot as part of your marriage because of some problem that you have, some physical issues or something like that, I will bless that. You know, the church could bless that. And I was thinking, yeah, doesn't that make you feel good? You know, that your marriage would be blessed by this higher entity, this spiritual element, and this other entity could be brought into your marriage. So again, we'll talk about human robot marriage without the third party in effect, but just bringing up the possibility of having some sacred part of our sexual lives brought into being as we evolve as a species, and as we evolve, just one more note, as we evolve, I maybe become a cyborg too if I start getting that hip replaced, and maybe some other parts of it replaced. And if I really am lucky and live as long as my aunt did, she lived past a year 100, I may be 80% robot. Okay, so whatever happens, my partner could be have as a marriage partner someone who is part robotic. So again, we've got a lot going on with our species and the way that we're evolving. And I'm hoping society catches up and uses these really powerful tools. The marriage mechanism has been a powerful tool for civilizing society. You think of all of the young people who get a break in life after they get married. Their income goes up, their opportunities go up, their stability goes up, societies around them, the communities grow in their wealth, all sorts of wealth, the social wealth with marriage. Let's bring robots into that and even further strengthen what we have going on. And we've got a good thing going.
So I like this, because what I'm hearing you say is not let's have a relationship with a machine. You're talking more about sort of like cyborg robotics. So bringing the machine into the human. And that I think I can get behind a little bit more than like, you mentioned like the real doll sort of thing. Like I think as a therapist, I struggle with the idea of forming a relationship with what is, you know, if we let the battery run down, an inanimate object. But what you're describing in terms of, I'm going to say, cyborgification, that makes a little bit more sense to me.
Yes, that's definitely, I love the way you put it. And that's another word you've coined. I hope that word works its way into the heading or something like that you coined that, because that's where we're headed along these lines. But I am actually also talking about the human robot marriage, one-on-one has been portrayed in a lot of movies lately as one aspect of this. There's a spectrum. I've got an MBA, so there's a matrix, you know, of different aspects, and there's this corner and that corner. Not to joke too much about this, but again, there are many dimensions to what I'm talking about in terms of marriage and robots, and definitely I'm also talking about that human and robotic marriage. Now, let me give you just a case. To outline, so we've got a specific, let's call this person Z, okay? He's got a long Chinese name. I don't want to mess up the name and all that. He's a 31-year-old, this is a real person, 31-year-old engineer, probably 33 right now, since I got the material and it's in my book. It's a little older now. And he married a robot that he created. Okay, he's an engineer. He put what he wanted into this robot. Okay, that sense, that mythology of Pygmalion comes to mind, right? From My Fair Lady and all of that. The notion that you've created something and then the gods took pity on you as a sculptor or as a designer. The gods take pity on you and that entity comes to life. That is what this individual is living right now with the robot as a marriage companion. He went through everything he could to do the marriage legally. And the reason why I like his case is that his mother attended the marriage, his marriage. And of course, we know the demographics of some areas of China, certainly not every area, but in his area of China, there are very few women to match male partners. And he wanted a female partner along those lines. So again, to design a robot of his own, to have it because of AI and all this wonderful technology that people like Wolf have been working on for so many years, we've got something that was breathed to life and became animate, became living, in, at least with his imagination is stretching the situation somewhat. And we have perhaps a happy ending with his mother a part of all of this, blessing the relationship. So one might say, okay, what's wrong with this? Should Z go off and try to find other companions? Should he go off and do something else that's creative with his life than putting this time and effort into this robot, which he designed, his sex bot that he designed? Well, maybe there aren't that many other good uses for his time and the time that he would have spent, you know, just alone and mourning or perhaps committing suicide, because if he's, you know, if he's so alone, some of that loneliness could backfire and he could become depressed. Again, I see a happy ending in all of this, and I'm hoping that you can see. I'm trying to convince Stephanie here that you can see a little bit more of a reason to bring marriage, a human robot marriage, into at least this particular scene.
I definitely see it as a happy story for sure. And part of the happiness in my mind was already shaded by the fact that you brought in a 2x2 matrix, because I'm a firm believer that just about everything can be solved.
That's life.
By a 2x2 matrix. I've got to ask you, where and how do you define that line, though, between a genuine emotional intimacy between a human and a robot? And where does it move from being genuine to being artificial?
That's such a great question. I know in studying all of this, I've seen a lot of things that were obvious publicity stunts. I've searched literature, contacted a lot of people and all that. I haven't gotten the financial support to do the type of full scale study that Pew Research or someplace could do, but I've gotten a good sense of what's happening in the area. There are many people right now, and I'm thinking of one of the last places where I've spoken on these issues. For example, the Reimagine Sexuality Conference that you might have heard of, where people who have sex dolls, sex robots, and all of that, and have long-standing relationships with these entities talk, and to hear their stories. Now, they could be conning us all or conning themselves. There could be some sort of fictional understanding, a pseudo relationship. Okay, I know that that Stephanie would know all the proper terms here, but I think pseudo relationship might help. I could have a pseudo relationship with Taylor Swift. Or Kelsey, or Travis, I'm going to get it. Travis Kelsey, not Kelsey Travis. Okay, whatever. I could have a pseudo relationship where I memorize everything they do and I watch them and I dream about them at nights and all of that. We as humans have pseudo relationships. And unfortunately, some of those have those pseudo relationships with our real life spouses, where that other person isn't really into us and has married us for money or for some other purpose, protection or whatever purpose. I can see a lot of that happening with robots, with sex robots. But on the other hand, I've talking to the people who've had these long-term relationships, I can see some real love there. Now, I live in a suburban, semi-suburban community here in Madison, Wisconsin, where people have that type of love toward their cars. I kid you not, the amount of time that some of these folks spend on just polishing, adoring, cleaning, detailing, putting their time and effort into these cars. If they could put that time and effort into a wife, I would, that wife would be really lucky. Again, we have that type of investment in many of our machines and artwork. I mean, a lot of people love the Mona Lisa. In fact, some people have actually legally tried to marry the Mona Lisa through various schemes and all of that. We should examine more carefully, and again, to tie all of these threads up, I hope, in some, I hope, quasi-professional way, we've got so many ways that we have, say, pseudo relationships that aren't the gold standard, that aren't the two or more persons who relate to us, each other fully and completely, whatever their sexuality or backgrounds and all of that, as human beings. We have parts of that ingested into so many of the other of our relationships, including robotics. And one would hope that we can respect that. We can perhaps have that person grow from those relationships into other relationships and learn from that. I remember my early days with computing. I can talk as, again, an older person in the 1970s. When I worked with the big iron, the big IBM systems, the mainframes and all of that. And I was the person with the white coat behind the scenes and writing the card decks. And I love that those computers so much. I can't even describe. And I was completely addicted. This was before any type of advertisements or publicity about computing and all of that. And I was getting paid fairly little at the time. I got a better salary and all of that. But again, to know that there's some power in computing, perhaps it's the logic, perhaps it's the consistency, although we can argue about whether or not our ChatGPT is biased and all of that. We've got machine learning expert in Wolf and to some extent myself here as well. At least the older computers, the logic and consistency and the sense of the future. Yeah, I would have married that. I would have married that machine had I had the opportunity. So again, we've got a lot of threads to tie together in a moving, fast-moving civilization in which I'm pretty sure I agree with Dr. David Levy, who says 2050 is the year that a robotic person marriage will be formally accepted. You know, with papers and everything like that, and an avenue for divorce. We can talk about conscious decoupling with our robotic partners if we would like to have a divorce. But again, I would push it to that extent that I think the year 2050 would be a good year to aim for. And I know that some people listening to this might say, hey, maybe 2040, but I'm saying 2050.
I want to do something I don't think I've ever done. And Wolf will be shocked to hear that you have gotten me to this point. I want to go a little bit Freudian for a minute. From sort of a psychoanalytic perspective, I think it's fascinating that you're tying together this idea of the young man in China who's living in an area that doesn't really have enough women to really find a spouse with the idea of self-marriage or having a marriage ceremony to show commitment to yourself, and then the idea of relationships with robots. I'm wondering at what point this becomes an exercise in ego, where, you know, kind of to speak to the feminist pushback, this idea that rather than actually compromise with another human being, rather than actually value the differences of another person, I'm just going to project my own ego into a robot form and marry that. That it becomes sort of this if we go down that road, rather sort of narcissistic idea. And I'm curious what your thoughts are.
You've stated things wonderfully, and it's a fantastic argument. I would say that today's sex robots, which are very much connected to, say, the ChatGPT machine learning aspect, will not be as self-reflective as older robots. I mean, I came from I was teaching artificial intelligence for a number of years back in the 80s, where the machine learning was laughed at. Okay, we could talk about perceptrons and all of that, but if you went down that alley, forget it, your career was done. And today's AI is exploratory. It's throwing spaghetti at the wall and see what fits. It takes culture, and you know, there's that notion of culture jamming. It's culture jamming on us, and in so many different ways, and expanding our horizons. I'm getting a little addicted to the ChatGPT voyages myself as I move along in my research, and so I can see exactly the power in I hope more exactly the power in your argument, and hope that with the newer generations of artificial intelligence and new concepts of what AI really is and can be for us, that we are moving beyond this notion of just having our own stereotypes and our own background and our own presuppositions and all that parroted back to us. It's pretty hard to work with AI right now and work with systems. I mean, anything AI, and work with a system from the old school. I mean, I'll give you some of my old programs from the expert systems era and all that back in the 80s and Prolog and Lisp and the languages I was programming in. But those were pretty precise. I could tell you exactly what the outcome would be. But I can't tell you what's going on with ChatGPT. There's so much that is taking from our culture, just as we're learning, okay? Just as we're learning from our cultures. And we get trained the same way these robots get trained, with new ideas. And you just gave me some, Stephanie. I've got I'm coming back very quickly with answers here, because I'm trained as a professor to do that. But I'm going to think about what you said for a long time to come, and hope I can generate a better answer. Thanks.
Yeah, and you're actually bringing up a sort of a part two to my question for me, because, you know, then if my feminist brain isn't going to the Stepford Wives, I'm creating an empty vessel I can pour my own ego into to marry. If we go into culture jamming and AI and ChatGPT, I have learned from these conversations that ChatGPT can hallucinate. I'm watching how algorithms are influencing people's understanding of history and current events. And so now, you know, your answer kind of brings up a different question for me, which is equally feminist, I think. And if it's not the empty vessel concern, then my next concern is, how do we keep an AI partner or a robotic partner from becoming abusive? How do we keep an AI husband from gaslighting its wife?
It's exactly right, and there are theories with all the lying that's going on, as confabulation, as people are saying, and hallucination, that we're being gaslighted right now by some of these programs that are laughing at us secretly. Lots of great issues there. Let's look at both sides of the abuse notion. I've studied robo abuse probably as much as anybody has recently, and it's just emerging. People will take it on and they'll do a much better job. Young people will do a much better job than I'm doing, but I've looked at robo abuse from the very beginning. We have something in us that wants to abuse those robots, and a lot of many of us do. It's going to be a huge issue with the kind of bullying of robots, and the kind of tampering with robots, manipulation that might lead to some real sabotage in various systems. And again, a lot of these robots that will be out in society and that will be forced to work with compulsory way, the robot at the mall, the robot that we deal with as a part of the police force and all that, all of this will, you know, is bringing out, is eliciting this rage against robots. Okay, that's at the one end, our rage toward it. It might be reflecting back some of that rage, okay? And I don't mean to be victim blaming here, and we can, oh God, we can get into whole discussions here, but those robots could reflect some of that rage back, as well as be quirky in their own ways and very dangerous to work with, which is why I want everybody to read my book. I'll do anything to, I'll read it to you. I'm telling the people out there listening, just call me up. I'll read it to you. Because I know that there is a lot of the dark side out there about robots and all of that. And unless we understand that, we will always be a little afraid, they'll always be a little creepy to us, and we think, oh, the computer technologists, the programmers are going to solve this. The researchers, they're going to solve this issue for us. All they're going to do is figure out, oh, paint them pink, give them a different name, make them taller or smaller or whatever, and people will love them. No, we need to be very wary of the robots we're working with for the sake of our lives. In a machine plant, of course, people could die immediately. That's why I dedicated my book to the poor people who have already died along those lines. If we're driving an autonomous vehicle, I was going to say Tesla, but there are some lower levels of Teslas that don't completely drive themselves. But, you know, a car that drives itself. We've got all sorts of things that can happen along those lines. We need to keep our own animal instincts together and realize, okay, this robot didn't understand the safe word. Okay. And keep that in the back of our heads at all times, just as we do with our dogs. I mean, anybody who's had a German Shepherd knows that German Shepherd has some point at which you can't push him. You know, the German Shepherd's looking at you every once in a while and saying, you could be my lunch. And we know that. We've had worked out that relationship with dogs over centuries, as Wolf was saying, over centuries. We got this legacy. We're going to have to start working on that legacy in terms of robots as well. And in bedroom contexts, in sexual contexts of all sorts, as well as personal contexts.
The movie AI, Steven Spielberg, 2001. Comes to mind because that movie was so hard to watch, how they just trashed the robots and all the human anger and angst and our more animalistic instincts came out. And one of the things that I was thinking about, you mentioned in the bedroom, are there going to be things that happen in the bedroom? Are there going to be things that happen because of a marriage or relationship that sparks that off? And just one example, Stephanie, you've told me about this, right? Like a couple finds out that there are toys involved, and now the man gets jealous of the toy, or why, you know, I can't, you know, last that long or run that hard or make her feel what the toy feels. And that's just a simple sex tech toy. Extrapolate that out to a fully functioning human. Do we have some concerns, or do you see some concerns already that come from the perception of a robot basically outclassing a human in certain capabilities, definitely in the capabilities of
relationships? I love that word, you know, outclassing, and that's actually a technical term in the robot world, brought up very early by somebody called Moravec. Okay, Hans Moravec brought the concept up, and I developed it in some of my essays. Yeah, exactly. The whole notion of outclassing us in so many different ways, outclassing us intellectually and sexually and all of that. And certainly physically, in terms of how much material can be lifted and all that by a robot that's stacking boxes in an Amazon warehouse. We're worried about our jobs. We're worried about our futures, our sexual futures, our personal futures and all that, our intellectual statuses. When we can buy, you can go to I was about to say Radio Shack, Best Buy, and buy a toy chess machine that can probably beat anybody in our families. It might not beat the highest chess master, but certainly somebody, a machine that can best us in games. There are so many problematic dimensions of that outclassing that we're going to be dealing with, and worries that will work themselves out in what we're doing. And I just want to mention some of the movies, since I promised to end with movies and give everybody something to do after this podcast. There's a movie, T.I.M., that goes exactly to this notion, T.I.M., T. I. period, M. period, technologically integrated manservant, is the way the acronym works out. And this movie gets into some of those jealousy notions. It starts with the robot getting jealous, though. But there are other jealousy notions that get worked out as the manservant gets integrated into a marriage. And the ending is not happy. Okay, there's also the movie Wife Like, which is available really widely on Hulu, and you could probably get it almost anywhere else for a pittance on the internet, which gets into this notion of the afterlife. As I was talking at the very beginning, I'm old. If something would happen to my partner, there's not going to be a number two husband out there for me. I would like to remember my partner the way I experienced him for so many years and all that. The movie talks about a corporation that builds these robots and some of the problems that can come into play when those robots indeed reflect as closely as possible the characteristics of that dead loved one. And this is, that theme is being reflected in a lot of thinking, computer-related thinking, as we, as many very rich scientists, and I'm talking Elon Musk category and all that, are talking about ways to take their brains and somehow download them into AIs, et cetera. Perhaps if my husband lives long enough, we could just download him into a robot, and he can be 100% cyborg along those lines, except for his mental capabilities. But a lot of that is really down the path in terms of technological development. Another movie, I would like to make sure every lonely gal sees this movie. Anybody who's ever been lonely, it's I'm Your Man, a German movie put together by Maria Schrader, who came up with an amazing plot where a woman is given to test a robot that fulfilled her every desire, programmed to just go out and fulfill everything that she'd ever wanted. An amazingly handsome robot too, and the way that she felt that she didn't deserve it. She didn't deserve this, and she was trying to give away, shake this guy, this robot, because she didn't deserve it. And I think that that's one of the reactions that a lot of us will have. Do I deserve this robot that's fulfilling my every need and all of that? I need to earn the sexuality that I receive and the kindness that I receive from other people. That's just granted to us by this ultra beautiful robot. And of course the ending, one of the reasons why I like to bring up the I'm Your Man movie, it actually has a happy ending. A lot of robot movies don't have happy endings, like Megan, where the robot starts going crazy and all that. And T.I.M. of course, is another one where the endings are not good. So I want happy ending robot movies by any means possible. So again, all these ideas are slipping into our culture. When you can go to a regular newspaper and find an article that says sex robots should stop production because they're terrible, and have a reasonable discussion with the letter, the person who wrote the letter, that letter, and an opinion piece and all that, that's moving our society pretty quickly into a world where we will have robots play substantial roles, whether or not it is indeed the case that we have them as full-blown marriage partners. That remains to be seen. But I think we're moving toward the point at which we can integrate these entities into our lives more fully and give them more value. So lots to be considered there. One more useful movie, because I know there's so many people who are also interested in space. Can you imagine going up to space and not having companion that is yours, compatible with yourself for purposes of sexuality or just companionship. There's a movie that deals with this. It's called Foe, F-O-E, strange name. And the fact that it was put together last year and maybe didn't get the box office numbers that it should, maybe that's part of it. But this is about a robot that is designed to take the place of a missing individual in a family, who the man is going up to space and the robot is designed to make sure the wife isn't lonely. There's a lot of discussion. It's a 2-hour film, and there's a lot of discussion on what the man will have available to him in space as well, as we deal with the possibility of these long space missions to Mars and one would hope other worlds. What kinds of sexuality can we perhaps gain from? And I would hope be enhanced by through our interactions with these intelligent and possibly conscious machines. We're moving toward the era where the idea of machine consciousness isn't just a joke. It isn't just a philosophical notion. It's something that we might need to consider in very serious terms as we deal with robot rights and other issues, many of which you've discussed. People can find as in your other podcast.
Stephanie, you know what we're doing? You know what's coming up?
So much sci-fi. So much sci-fi.
Yes!
Where's the historical romance, guys? Why are there never any romance? Wait, no, Doctor Who. Never mind, I'm covered.
Well, Margaret Atwood wrote a story about a robot marriage type of situation. There's a lot of great science fiction. There's a lot in my book. It's all listed along with all the academic stuff. But I hope to come up with something that's a little less formal that will be a guide to these issues for people who'd like to do a little bit of exploring. I did a lot of my exploring during the pandemic, which is why the book came out so dark. We had a family member die and all of that. And I thought, well, what would I give the world? Well, if I could give the world a book that would outline some of these issues and maybe could be a comfort to somebody who was working third shift, late nights with a robot and was scared by that robot, some comfort that other people were scared too. That's why I wrote that particular book, and I'm hoping that that people might find it a way to sort out some of these issues. I have no answers. I know that Stephanie likes it when people say, I don't know, and where things are headed, I don't really know, but I'm sticking with that 2050 the prediction. I'm still thinking that, yeah, we could have some type of formal marriage between some certificate blessing or something like that between now and 2050.
So stay tuned. 2050 sounds so far away, and yet 2024 sounded so far away just a couple years ago. So right around the corner. I know we've got just a couple more minutes, Joanna. Just one final question I had for you. If we think about that world in 2050, what are some of the things that you're hoping people are researching now, people are thinking about now, people are giving thought to in the legal sense now to get ready for that world?
I would love, and I guess we discussed it, Wolf and I discussed right before the show, for people to do research on the children's aspect of all of this, child robots, child sex bots. There's so much research that needs to be done. I'm too old to hire the teams of attorneys or work with the agencies that would be able to do that type of research, but it is so needed, and we'll learn so much about these issues through that. But again, putting all of that aside, I'm praying that somebody who listens to this broadcast or reads my book can have the resources needed to do research in that area. But again, I'm hoping that the kind of research that's done on marriage with robots and robots in general gets past this this really simplistic idea that many social robot researchers have that's possibly pushed on us because we have to do peer-reviewed articles that have to be perfectly designed and you know, have a clear R-squared and all of that, you know, just have all that all the statistics in the right places. We need people to understand the feelings involved and all those issues, amazing issues that Stephanie brought up that were so important. How does dealing with a robot in a personal way enhance or drain us? So many case studies, interviews, ways for us to reflect through narrative through the years, too. I mean, it's not a one-shot deal where you get a connection with a robot and then drop it. We're talking about something that will affect us over a period of time. We need those chronological studies. And we need one more. Do I get the three wishes here? I've got one more. We're all thinking about what it is to be older and the cognitive capacities. I know, for example, my lovely aunt Lil, I would bring her toy robots and I would think, oh, this is wonderful. She loves these. I found out after she died by one of her caretakers that she was scared by those robots. Something she never told me because her niece developed robots and AI and all that. But of course, when she was left to her own devices in her little room in the nursing home, she hid these away until I would come. You know, we have assumptions about how old people think. We need to do research and do a lot of thinking, a lot of talking, because all of you folks are going to get old and you'll be lucky to be cyborgs someday. You know, I'm looking forward to the day I'm a cyborg and I hope to be back in the show in 40, 50 years and tell you all about it.
And I really think that that's where we're heading. We're starting out with robot marriage. By the time everybody listening to this episode is in our 80s, odds are we are all going to be some form of cyborg. So, you know, we often say the personal is political or the political is personal. But in this case, you know, that's true for the science too. We, even people like me, who are generally robot skeptics, need to recognize that this is now a part of our life, a part of our reality, and is going to probably end up being a part of our identities, especially as we age. Joanne, thank you so much for being here with us today. I have so enjoyed this conversation. And, you know, everybody listening, thank you so much for tuning in to Securing Sexuality, your source for the information you need to protect yourselves and your relationships.
Securing Sexuality is brought to you by the Bound Together Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. From the bedroom to the cloud, we're here to help you navigate safe sex in a digital age.
Be sure to check out our website, securingsexuality.com, for links to more information about everything we've discussed here today, as well as our live events.
And all those movies. And please join us again for more fascinating conversations about the intersection of sexuality and technology. Have a great week.